This week on Widnes Rugby Chat, former Vikings captain Kevin Brown opens up about his time at the club, and we catch up with Simon Finnegan and Jack Owens at the first press conference of the year. Hello and welcome to episode 44 of Widnes Rugby Chat podcast. It's the second of 2021. I'm trying to keep them fortnightly this year, but I've had so much content I could have done them weekly. I hope the two-week wait for this one hasn't been too long. Got a great in-depth chat with Kevin Brown, who talks about his time at the club and his controversial departure, plus the bits that happened after that. And I also catch up with Simon Finnegan and Jack Owens, who held their first press conference of the year last week via video link. Thanks, as always, to sponsors PD Law Solicitors, Arnold Gorse Financial Management, Whistle and Parklands FC. Again, not much talking from me this week because we've got some great interviews, and we'll go straight into a couple of questions first with Simon Finnegan and Jack Owens. Jack, it's slightly more awkward asking this question because Simon's in with you, but can you just tell us through the sort of players' reaction to Tim Sheens' departure and the change in coach over the off-season?
It was just one of those things that happened, wasn't it? Obviously, Sheens, he come last year, and we had a short spell with him until the season. Unfortunately, got cancelled due to the pandemic. But look, when the message comes through, it's just one of those things, isn't it? It's just something you've got to deal with. Not just coaches, but players come and go. And as a professional athlete, it's just something you've got to adapt to. Finney's come in and put a different bit of a different twist and different aspect on how things have been running this year, and it's just one of those things you do as players. We adapt and we move forward.
Simon, you mentioned in a few of your interviews about wanting to get your style of play and your sort of ethos, if you like, in the team. Tell us a bit more about what you're hoping that looks like.
Oh, well, I think I'm very one of the first ones I did. I'm a fan myself, so I like to go to a game and I like to enjoy what I'm seeing in front of me. You know, even as a coach, it's not always going to look like that. You know, there's games where they don't play particularly well or things like that, but I also want to be entertained to a degree. You know, some of these games we go to are quite cold, so you want to go and watch your team play and you want to enjoy what they're doing and what they're producing and express themselves, because I think I've got some players here that, you know, they've been together since they were kids. So some of the things that they will do on a field, you know, you can't set structure for. They just let it happen, which I've seen in training. You know, that I'll give them certain things what I want them to do, but then they'll come up with these little unique plays that they've got, you know, like Jack and Danny between themselves, which is really exciting to watch. But I've said before, my team will work hard, but, you know, we'll move the ball around as well. So we should be exciting to watch, but we'll also should be a hard-working team. That's what my vision is, and you know, I'm pretty confident that they'll produce that, and people will go away seeing players that one want to give for the shirt and work hard, but also willing to express themselves and play decent rugby.
And I suppose the first league game come out of the hat couldn't have been a better one or a worse one, I guess, for you. I mean, how do you approach that one?
Yeah, the old random draws that keep coming up in rugby league, where you got Challenge Cup and all these teams always manage to find ways and stories to come up against each other. It's good, to be honest. You know, I've got nothing but good things to say about Newcastle and my time there. I know I was only there for a year and a half, but it's a brilliant club, what they do on and off the field. And it'll be a huge challenge, because I think regardless of it, you know, they were a League One club the year before, but they certainly aren't a League One club in stature and what they've signed. They're not coming up just to survive and stay in the championship for a year. They're certainly having a crack at it, and they'll be in and around, you know, the playoffs. I think that's what they're pushing for. So it'll be a huge challenge to go there on round one and be ready and come away with a result.
Jack, a few of the lads at Newcastle obviously were at Widnes last season and previous, and they've sort of ended up there via the Ottawa situation. I mean, did you have any conversations with any of them players about their decision to go to Ottawa? I presume it was obviously a big financial sort of attraction to sign there. Have you had any conversations with them about that?
Just in terms of the lads who went there, I think they just wanted to get back to full-time rugby, a lot of them. We all play the sport, whether it's part-time or full-time, because we love it. And we want to make a living from it. So obviously the lads you're referring to, the likes of the Twins and Sam Wild and Jack Johnson, you know, they're still relatively young and they wanted to make some of themselves in the game still. And I think that pull of a full-time opportunity again at an unknown place as well, because it was the first year starting off. I think that's attracted them over there, but unfortunately it fell through and they've ended up at Newcastle now and they're going to want to prove themselves again.
Simon, can I ask about the fixtures and the format for this season? Because obviously you're not playing everyone home and away. And Widnes, of course, have got Toulouse and I think London away, but not at home. Do you see that having a big impact on how that shapes up at the top end?
Yeah, I think it probably will. But it's hard to... The big factor in it, we don't know what's going to happen with Toulouse as well, which, I mean, that could have a knock-on effect to everything else as well. So, I mean, there's no ideal situation, is it? I think if you look across everyone's fixtures, they'll have something that's worked out in their favour and they'll have something that's probably gone against them. So it's a really difficult one because I know they're probably scratching their head how to make it work the best way, and I think this is probably the best scenario they could have come up with. But, yeah, it's not worked out ideal for us in that way, but then we've got Featherstone at home, we don't have them away, so you know, like I said, it works out good in some ways, it works out bad in others, so you know, I can't really complain about that. You know, you might ask me again in the middle of May and say how's it working out, and I might say it's ridiculous, why haven't they done it that way? But at the moment, you know, it's a hard one, in it, because you might get to the end and go, well, we've got a really bad run of fixtures to end the season with no home games. But yeah, I think it's just a plus that we've got back on the field. Oh, I hope we get back on the field when we do. And I'll say it now. I don't think I'm going to sit here and complain about our fixtures and how they've worked out, because, you know, they've done the best of a bad situation, I think.
I know you'll probably say you're always looking at ways you can improve the squad, and obviously I spoke to Phil Finney recently. Have you got any irons in the fire for additions before the season, or are you looking at the loan market at all, or are you happy with what you've got?
I'm always looking, but that doesn't mean I can go and spend. It's probably like your wife and that. They look but don't spend, don't they? So, well, sometimes they do spend, but I mean, I'm always looking, but we won't. If there's something there that we need to do and it fits our long-term and short-term future, because, you know, we're not a club that are going to be reckless with our money anymore, and I don't think we should be. And I've spoke about this a few times, whether that upsets people or not, I wouldn't come into this club and recklessly spend money, even if it was there. I just don't think we should do that. I've got a duty to the club. So we have targets long term and short term, and they have to fit both. So if they're there and it fits, that we can do something. But if it's not, even if we might need it, you know, for the short term, but it doesn't fit us in both of them areas, we won't do it either, because I think my job and the club's job all together now is to make sure when we do things like that, we get it right. Because, as you know, and I've spoke about this before, what happened in the past, it is the past, but we can't ignore it and think that it never happened. We've got a duty to everyone within the club and the town that we make sure these are right and these decisions have effect on everything. And I take a lot of personal pride and responsibility in that. So, you know, I won't do anything that doesn't benefit the club in all of them areas.
How have you found it coming in? Because the squad was pretty much already built when you got there. I think only Adam Lawton's come in since then. Do you see that as a positive or a negative? I suppose it leans a bit more on your actual coaching rather than your recruiting ability now.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, I've done this before at Newcastle when I went, I think I joined them with four games in, so I couldn't have a huge input. I think we brought some players in, which we brought Adam in, as you said. But yeah, it puts a huge focus on my coaching, which again is good. It's a pressure I want, because at the end of the day, my job is as a coach. So first job and one of my main jobs is to make my players better. So regardless of who they are and if I brought them in or not, I've got to make them better. And one of the attractions to this job as well is I've watched them from afar, and there is a lot of talent here. And I think we all know, and we've spoke about on this call, that an area that needed improving was experience in the middles, and Tim and the club did that before I joined. So the signings they've made have been good. I'm happy with what they've brought in. So now I've got to make them better. And, you know, the squad is in a good place. There is, and I get to see them every day, and I'm happy with what I'm seeing. And there's certain ones that I'm watching and thinking they've impressed me more than, you know, as a fan from sitting in a stand and watching a game. I'm watching them in training and doing things in training that I'm thinking, well, you know, they've got something, some of these people. So I'm excited by what we've got as a group and what they can do.
Can I ask you about Adam Lawton as well? And I suppose, Jack, you could jump on this as well. Obviously, he feels like a player that's perhaps not reached the potential that he could have. But do you feel like he can get there now as a top-end championship player and have a big season for Widnes?
Yeah, I do. And we brought him over to Newcastle with the same, you know, same ambition there to get the best out of him. And he's at that stage in his career now where he's, you know, he started as a young kid. He had a fair bit of spotlight on him, and he got through it at Widnes. And then he moved on, and it's not quite worked out, even though he's had the ability and all that. But I think he's at that time in his career now where he knows that he's ready to show it, and he's got to do it here week in, week out, and in training. But he's certainly got the ability. And there's a misconception about Adam that he hasn't got the attitude to do it, which isn't right. It isn't fair on him. I mean, he's got certain areas that he needs to fix on the field and in training, but it's never been about his attitude and what he's like as a person. So in my time with him and knowing him, he's been terrific. So I'm actually excited by what he's going to produce. And obviously he's got areas to fix, but that's my job again, to fix them and get the best of his goodness, you know, and his good abilities out there and showing them consistently as well, which, you know, I can't wait to see him go, because I think he knows coming back here what he needs to perform as well, because they'll be spotlighting him again. He's a witness lad. He's got to come back into this fold, and he's got to play well, because the pressures that come from being a local back into this, you know, the magnifying glass is going to be on him a little bit more, and he knows that, and he's aware of that, and I think he'll prove some people wrong.
Yeah, just from my point of view on Lawton, I've obviously, when I got to 16 and I went up to 18s and started training and playing with Lawton, you actually realise how good he is when you spend all your week with him. You know, skill-wise, you can kick with both feet, you can play with both feet, you can run over someone. He's got it all, Lawton. And just to echo what Finney said, it's just the right time of his life for him, I think. Now he's settled down, he's got a family, he's got a couple of kids, and he's just ready to come back. And from my personal experience from leaving Widnes and coming back, I did feel there was that little bit more spotlight from the fans on you, because at the end of the day, you want to play well, and you want to play well for your hometown team. And Lawton's publicly come out and said he's got a point to prove, because he felt like he didn't fulfill his potential his last time at Widnes. So I'm really excited to see Lawton get on the field. Showing glimpses in training already, what a huge talent he is, and he's a really big addition to this squad, and yeah, I can't wait to see him on the field.
Could he be a 13, Simon, do you think? Is that where, I know obviously you've named him in the squad numbers, you're looking at second row, but is his playmaking ability a potential option to give you that extra pivot at 13 maybe?
Yeah, and I mean, that shows his ability, doesn't it? I mean, he can fill in. He's obviously got a squad number to play on an edge, but he could easily fill in the middle. I mean, I was an assistant at Toronto when he was at Rochdale on loan playing as a 13. And to be honest, that day destroyed us. We won the game, but he was unplayable. So he gives us that option, which also helps with our squad. You know, we've got someone that can cover a couple of positions. A couple of our back roles can do that. So he's got that ability, and he could be someone that we could use at that role as well.
And you've only got Logan as a specialised hooker, really, in the squad. I've noticed on a few of the training videos, Joey Lyons being going in at acting half, maybe. I mean, what are you looking at your rotation options at hooker?
Yeah, he's been training a little bit there as well. So, and we've got young Lewis Els, who's another one that we've been putting in at 9. He missed some rugby last year. He's had some injury problems, but, you know, he's trained. He hasn't missed any session this so far, this pre-season. So we've got some options around 9, and you know, we've got some really good rugby players in our squad, so I'm not too worried about who we might have to move around if we have to do something like that, because we've got some. I mean, even Jack's played nine before. He doesn't really like it, but and Danny Craven as well. He spent a year on loan playing at nine for Halifax, I think, most of the game. So I like having rugby players that can adapt and play different positions and have the mentality also to be able to do it and want to do it. You know, it's all right. Players, you chuck them out of positions and they kick stones and don't want to do it. I've got a really good group here that, you know, will say, oh, okay, I've got to play out of position, but I'll put everything I've got into that position. So I've got a really good group in terms of that.
I was going to ask you, Jack, actually, about that, about that experience last year. Because, you know, obviously Logan plays most of the game anyway, so it was only maybe for 10, 15-minute spells. I mean, how did you find that adapting from playing one to then going in at nine? Because I know Tim was quite big on trying to play Joe Lyons at fullback, wasn't he?
It felt longer than 10 or 15 minutes. No, it was just that was the way he wanted to play last year. I think with me and Joe, you know, you have got some versatility there, and he's already mentioned Craven as well. And last year, he just seen me as a better option for nine than to put Joey to one. But it can be a hard transition. Obviously, you know, I'm not used to doing that many tackles, and it's a different type of fitness. But like Finney said, all lads there, no one's one to mourn and kick stones. And he's already mentioned young Elsie as well. And something that's not really been spoken about yet is probably the youth that we've still got in the squad coming through. We've got a lot of lads left from the academy system who've got a point to prove this year. And, you know, I think some of them are going to pop up and surprise a few fans this year.
There's lots more from Simon Finnegan and Jack Owens, which will come in the next episode of the podcast, which will be in 2 weeks, and also feature an interview with Willie Iser. But for now, let's go into the main subject of this edition of the podcast. I caught up with Kevin Brown, now at Salford, former Widnes captain, to spill the beans. I want to really go back to the start, really, and you signing for Widnes, because, you know, you'd had a pretty successful spell at Huddersfield, and Widnes were pretty ordinary in 2012, which is when I think it was on Magic Weekend when it was announced that you signed. What made you make that decision at that point of your career?
So that was completely Dennis, really. I'd have never gone to Widnes if it weren't for Dennis Betts. He was someone who I respected and admired, and still do. You know, one of the most in rugby league, and without him, you know, I wouldn't have gone. And I knew I was taking a big step, because I watched the game at Magic Weekend, and I think they got beat by 60 odd points off Warrington. They weren't even competing, but I could see past that. I could see what Dennis and what Steve and it was Paul Cullen at the time, were trying to build, and I trusted these guys, you know, and I could have gone to Wigan at the same time, so I got offered, like, I wanted to come home. I just had my son. I was missing my family, and I know I was only living in Huddersfield, but I'm a real family person, and I wanted my wife to be able to nip round the corner with a baby, and so I needed to come back to Lancashire, and you know, Wigan made me an offer, and, you know, I was very, very close to going to Wigan. And then Widnes came in, and I went with Danny Tickle the very first meeting. We went together, and we drove there together and made the decision together. And we said, like, well if you're in, I'm in. And that's how we did it. We were best mates. And, you know, unfortunately, Danny couldn't come till the year after. But they put a transfer fee in for me and bought me there and then. So, you know, I'm really happy about the decision I made. I loved every single minute. I mean, I loved every single minute of Widnes. You know, I did, and it was just a real shame how it ended. We can speak a bit more about that now. Obviously, the club's gone yeah. Since then. So, it's just a shame how it ended.
Yeah, I mean, do you think, looking back, that actually the move suited you quite well? Because It always strikes me that you loved being sort of the linchpin and the number one player and almost like a big fish in a small pond in many ways. And does having that responsibility on your shoulders suit the way you play?
Oh, I like having the responsibility. I'm not, I've played in big teams where I've played my part as well. I know we didn't win anything at Warrington, but we played in three finals in 2 years, so we didn't do bad there. But yeah, having that control and leading a team is something that I really want to do and I really like to do. And I think most halfbacks want to do that. I think that's your job as an halfback. You've got to lead the team around, and that was my job for England as well. But at Widnes, it was just so easy. With Dennis, Dennis was one the person who was making the decisions. Giving us the freedom to throw the ball around, because we weren't winning games boring. We'd throw the ball around, we'd come up with players each week for different opposition. And I don't think Dennis ever got the sort of applause that he maybe would have done at another club, because some of the stuff we were playing, Widnes haven't played like that for years and years, and like since they was like the world champs, you know what I mean? And since Dennis has left, they've not played like that since. They've gone downhill. So I always feel a bit sorry for Dennis. He always got a lot of stick from the fans, but when you look at the period he was there, and the what he was spending to compete. We went to Wigan and beat Wigan with 11 men, but the 11 men on the field, God, the salaries compared to what Wigan's salaries would have been, they'd have been 60-70% of what they were on. So the money what the club Widnes gave Dennis to spend and how we did it was, we nearly made a Challenge Cup final. I think we made the top six. We went a massive game unbeaten in 1 year. And then slowly but surely, the funds kept getting pulled away and pulled away and pulled away. And that's ultimately about the only reason why I left.
Yeah, do you think, because it's interesting that, I think I agree with you about Dennis, just on the basis that we talked about 2012 and how poor that season was. But actually, quite a few of the players that played in that season were still around in, 2014, 2016, when it was a lot better, which I suppose is testament to Dennis's ability to develop those players.
Well, Dennis told me exactly what he was going to do and exactly what was going to happen, and the only frustration he had was he signed players that didn't bring any culture to the place. So he's a great guy, Dennis, and his first value is culture. So having a good place to play and being good people. Now there were players there who, were getting involved in all sorts of stuff off the field. There was suspensions, there was drinking problems, there was all sorts, and it's all been documented. So I don't need to mention the names of the players, but there was players there that weren't contributing to success or a good culture moving forward. So, but they were they were better players in the team, with the skill and how they play. So Dennis took the hit. He got rid of them players, knowing that the team wouldn't be as good on the field short term, but long term that it would be more successful down the track when, we added a bit of quality here and there, and obviously they bought me and bought Tix, and we brought that culture too. It wasn't something that, we only added value on the field. I think the big thing that he came for me and Tix was he knew how we were as people. We knew we were family men, and that we'd bring good culture to the club. And once that culture was sorted, I think you see how we just went through the sort of gears a little bit on the field.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Gazzot came as well for that season. I think that was 2013. Was it 2013? It might have been 2014, actually, thinking about it. I think I read something somewhere where were you expecting there to be more signings than just you and, Danny Tickle and people like that?
Yeah, initially he said we was going to maybe get a few more. And then once we got in, he sort of pulled the plug a little bit. That did happen. Steve said there was a few more players going to come in. And then when Gaz came available, I said, well, we need to go and get him and we'll be able to manage him. Obviously he's got his wayward side, Gaz, but what he did for Widnes, he was great. He played really well. I think he got picked for England that year. So he was fantastic for us. But yeah, there was a little bit of that. Steve did say he was going to sign a couple more. But I was fine with it. I was always asking for more players and asking for, you know, are we getting any more signings? But the team that they were assembling with the money that they had was quite good. Mm. You know, Corey Thompson, Chris Houston, Danny Galea, your players like that were pretty good players. They added a few more in there, you know, Liam Carberry from Wigan and players like that, Greg Burke. So they added a few more quality players who were potentially, you know, going to add value. But they didn't go out there and splash any more money after me and Tex. So he just stopped after that. But
do you think that was to do with the licensing situation? Because obviously, you know, Steve O'Connor was big on the licensing and the franchise thing, and then obviously when Super League changed that, I think most Widnes fans probably noticed the change of approach from the club, where, you know, it's more about avoiding relegation then.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that on that one. I don't know what the reasoning was for that, but that happened. And then, but at the same kind of time, Paul Cullen left. Mm. So I don't know whether it had something to do with that as well. Obviously, Jimmy came in and he was trying to run it right by a business then. Mm. So yeah, things did change, and then we got all these good players in. But then slowly and surely, these players were leaving, and that was what was, you know, frustrating me. We were doing really well, and then, you know, Danny Glear would leave, and we wouldn't replace him. Or, you know, Corey Thompson would leave, and we wouldn't replace him. And things like that were happening. And then you left,
and they didn't replace you, basically. So yeah, that was the pattern.
That's it. And I don't know. I think it was run more as a business than trying to be a successful club. But whether the business without a successful rugby club is crazy, because it just never works.
Yeah. Just talking on, I wanted to ask this about Gaz Hock. Do you think he probably would have liked to have stayed at Widnes beyond that year? Because I do agree with what you say, and you managed him and got the best out of him. And I think, you know, I always used to say, if you asked me 100 times if I'd have signed Gareth Hock, I'd have said yes 100 times, because I think he attracted so much attention on the pitch that it allowed, like, Cameron Phelps and Rhys Ambry and players like that to expose the space down that side where he was attracting defenders. And I think he was with you, actually, and I asked him, and I think he sort of wish he'd had the option to maybe stay.
Yeah, they just couldn't afford Gaz. Gaz wanted a lot of money, and Gaz was obviously a world class player who was getting money thrown at him. So I think, was it Salford he left?
Yeah, he went to Salford. Yeah,
and obviously Marwan was just throwing silly cash around at the time. So I think they probably did the right decision. I don't think, you know, they could compete with Marwan, and you know, once Steve wasn't throwing as much money in as he once was, I think it was probably the only decision that they could do. Because throwing all the money at Gaz and not spreading it, then that would have been a disaster. Gaz obviously got a great contract under Marwan, and we had to move on. But I think they got Chris Houston after that, so that wasn't a bad, because Chris was brilliant. When I was there, he was brilliant. He was a great pro. He was another one who brought great culture to the club. But yeah, then it sort of just hit. You could start seeing, you know, they were financially, we all got told to do these forms, and we'd get a pre-season camp if we did them. It was like some education thing. We did them, and then that never happened. It was just a continuing theme of, something had happened, someone had had money taken out of the pay, and I went away and played in the Four Nations, and came back and went away on holiday, and it weren't even something that I'd been pushing. I'd played against Australia and, you know, gone to Mexico, and literally got a phone call off Dennis, and Dennis said, have you heard any news about Warrington? And I said, oh, no idea what you're talking about, what's going on. And it was then when there was they were discussing transfer fees and I ain't even spoke to anyone. So Dan rung me again and he said, "Oh look, they've agreed a fee for you, but if you want to stay, you know, I think you'll still be able to stay." And I said, "Oh, has the fee been agreed then?" And he said, "Yeah, Jimmy's agreed a fee for you." And I said, "Well, if he's agreed a fee for me, he's happy to let me go, then I'll go." And that was it. That was as quick as it was. Jimmy rung me up. He asked me to sign some stuff. He had to sign him on holiday in Mexico. And I was sold. It wasn't me pushing for a move. And up until sort of now, I've not been able to say because I ended up signing some embargo thing that Jimmy made me sign. But obviously, that doesn't count for anything now. But I was really disappointed. I was really excited, don't get me wrong. My first game, you know, I played against Brisbane in my first game in a World Club Series. And I played in a lot of big games and cup finals. And I was disappointed not to win, but I was gutted not to, you know, stay at Widnes as well. You know, if the club would have kept building, you know, just shown a little bit of ambition, then no one would have wanted to leave, not one person. And that's why Gaz didn't want to leave, because it was a real good place to be. You know, Dennis was unbelievable as a coach, and I'll say it again, he doesn't get the recognition he deserves for what he did at that club, holding it together, keeping us. You know, so we didn't know what was really going on financially until it was sort of, you know, really apparent. He was just trying to get our minds focused on the game, but it was just one of them. It's a shame how it all ended. Frustrating.
I mean, to be honest, it surprised me when I was looking at your stats before that you left at the end of the 2016 season, because that was the season where, you know, Widnes were top of the league after, what was it, 7 or 8 games, had that big win at Wigan away, which was probably, you know, speaking as someone who's, I'm only 32, but certainly the high point of following Widnes in my lifetime, and I'm sure it is for many others. It's crazy, really, to think that it went from that to then getting to the end of the season and the likes of you leaving the club. What was it like around that time where you were top of the league and, you know, it felt like it was all coming together?
It were brilliant. I said to him, we don't realise how close we are here. So one or two more players and a little bit of depth and we can compete, like, and not just up for the best, but we can actually compete. And then it went the other way. So players started to leave. We started to hear about, you know, bits of financial problems, and then obviously players started getting picked off. Warrington came in for me and they were quick to sell me, so it was, I don't know, looking back, it's heartbreaking, really, because all you want to do is build, and I loved it. I loved every single minute, and obviously all the fans think did the wrong thing and just jumped off and whatever, but I'm not, I've lived with that for long enough now, it's not that bad. But I wish I could have just told my side of it, you know, when they were throwing snakes at me, and I'd love throwing them in a different direction.
Yeah, I mean, do you think Widnes fans might have mellowed towards you now that they've got a bit more of an understanding of what was happening in the background of the club?
Well, I don't know if they have. I don't know whether they have got an understanding of what actually was going on. I think they all thought it was me. I've never really spoke before about, you know, it weren't me trying to leave. It wasn't. It was. I remember it being on a sun lounger in Mexico and being rung up, and Dennis was as gutted as me, because the reason we were doing so well is because everyone was good mates. It wasn't, Dennis wasn't our boss, he was the boss by title, but he was a good mate. We were playing for him because we really loved him, you know what I mean? And that's something that you can't buy. You know, your players ripping in, and that wasn't me. It was every single player in our team. We really enjoyed being there and loved the coach and love going into work every day, and you was around there as well, and you saw how much of a family feel it was, and we loved the way of, you know, overachieving, going in there as underdogs and winning every week.
I mean, yeah, and I think I read you said somewhere it was the most enjoyable part of your career. And I think in that year there was a bit of talk about you leaving to say to go to St. Helens, and then and you did say something in the programme and said that you weren't leaving. Was that a bit earlier in that year? Do you remember anything about that?
I think that was the year before. I can't remember. It was a similar sort of time because Cronulla came in and so did St. Helens.
Right.
But at the time, they put a massive fee on my head, and it wasn't a problem. It was just, yeah, let's crack on. You know what I mean? I weren't leaving, I was staying. And then all of a sudden, I think Warrington must have agreed the fee with Jimmy Rule, and then that was it.
And looking at that year, the 2016, a really good start, and then went on a big losing run. There's a game that stands out in my mind. I think we beat Castleford 18-0 and ended up getting beat. Do you put that down to what was happening off the field at that time? I mean, what could have happened to kick on from being top of the league at Easter, and what do you think needed to happen at that point?
Oh, being top of the league at Easter were great, but then I think we got a couple of injuries, and what we didn't have was any depth. If we'd have been able to compete with our top 17, 18, 19 with anyone, but our, you know, 20 to 25 compared to Wigan's 20 to 25. And once you get through that Easter period, you need your backup then, because there's no way you can just get through Easter fully fit for everyone. And if you do, you're limping onto the field and you're tired and it brings out fatigue. And that was the only difference. We just didn't have the strength in depth. We had a great team, and that's where it was frustrating, because if we'd have had another couple, we could have held on to that top spot, I'm convinced.
I mean, I looked, you're actually sent off in your very last game for Widnes. Did you used to like having the last game of the season off, because you got sent off two successive years, the last home game, so you missed the last away game of the season each year. I don't know if you knew that.
If you knew that, it was
St. Helens, you got sent off in your very last game. I suppose you would have liked to have left in circumstances where you could have said goodbye after giving such good service.
Yeah, definitely. It would have been good just to, I don't know, say goodbye, but obviously it weren't to be. Didn't know it came out of nowhere, really, so it's just one of them, yeah.
And obviously I remember the game at Warrington when you played for Warrington, you know, the snakes and stuff like that, and you know, what was that like? I mean, obviously it spurred you on because you got a hat-trick, didn't you? Was that the cup game, I think it was?
Yeah, it was difficult, but it did spur me on. And that's what I mentioned previously in the interview, that I miss everything. I miss the chance, the cheers and everything about it. And that really drove me on that day, because I thought to myself, if Widnes fans want to treat me like this, I'm going to, you know, stick it right back at them. And the only way I could do it was by playing. So that's what I did, and I scored three tries and we knocked him out of the cup, I think. So, but I went home, I didn't go home really happy.
Yeah.
I went home thinking, well, a few of my mates are out of the cup, and I weren't as happy as I should have been or would have been if it was a different team I'd scored three against and knocked them out.
I suppose it's hard when you've got so many good memories with a club, and then sort of you get that reception, and it's sort of like you say, not really a fault of your own. Do you regret going? Do you feel like you could have dug your heels in and not gone to Warrington, or?
Oh no! The club would have gone bust, mate. The club would have gone bust. The club got about 400,000 in total for my, like, you know what I mean, wages and transfer fees and everything. So without that money, the club would have been knackered. So I knew the state the club was in, so I couldn't have stayed, because it just wouldn't have, they'd have gone bust quicker than they did. How long did it take before, what was it, another 18 months before they actually went bust?
It got relegated end of 2018, and then obviously administration was started 2019.
I was hopeful that money would keep them going, and you know, they could have put it good to good use, got a few players or whatever, or paid a few debts off, but it weren't to be. And but I knew the club needed the money, because the club went from he's not for sale to Saints, he's not for sale to Cronulla to yeah, he's for sale.
Mm.
And obviously the year after you left, you know, finished bottom of the league, but then survived in the last game against Catalan. Steph Marsh's infamous tackle away at Catalan. I mean, from your point of view, watching from afar, it must have been disappointing to see the club sort of drop down so quickly.
It was devastating, because it was all my mates. I was still hanging around with them. They were all my best mates. So I was devastated, absolutely devastated.
I suppose we could talk about some of your best moments at Widnes, I guess. What are the ones that stand out for you from your time at the club?
As a team, I think when we went on the run and we were at the top of the table, no one gave us a chance. And then we beat some really, really good sides. And we got the respect off all the big sides. And you know, everyone at first was resting. You know, they were resting players when they played us on our field, and using that as an excuse. And then when we started turning everyone over, that's when everyone were bringing the best sides, and that was probably the best moment as a team. You know, getting to the semi-final, being in the, you know, the top half of the table, leading the table. That period was mega. Some of the magic weekends, the times we were beating Salford, you know, the money that they'd spent, and we just kept turning them over. Were brilliant. Individually, probably, you know, getting, you know, the player of the month, you know, best player in Super League, being recognised for that. I think it was in 2015 or 16, and then getting in the dream team was mega. Obviously, I got picked for England again when I was at Widnes as well. So, you know, that was a big. You know, massive accolade personally. It was just so many. The game that sticks out though was beating Wigan away. We'd already beat them away once that year, and then beating them away again. And the manner we did it with 11 men and just keep defending our line and turning up. I've never been a part of a game where everything was there to lose the game, but we just refused to lie down and came over such a good side. Was something that we still speak about now, and the lads who played in that game and the fans who were there, it was just a remarkable day, that.
Yeah, I mean, it was 2014, the year you got in the dream team, which, to be fair, like, especially for a halfback, for a player from outside maybe the top teams to get into the dream team is quite a fair achievement. And obviously that was the year that Widnes made the playoffs for the only time in theory, and lost that match to Warrington in the playoffs. I think was winning 19-6 or something like that, yeah, at half time. I mean, what's your memories from that game?
Oh, I remember getting a try disallowed and thinking, you know, that was an harsh call, because we did a play that we'd practiced, and I knew the lads had run it right. It was on the left-hand side, and I think it was Phelps who scored on Marsh, and we scored in the corner, which would have saw the game off. And I think Joe Monaghan scored right at the end to win the game. And just the dejection by losing away to Warrington. I think, you know, after the game, it made me feel happy that we were so down and we were so close. But I was happy when, you know, the dust had settled that, you know, we've gone from everyone thinking we're going to get relegated and not win a game to thinking we should have beat Warrington at Warrington in a playoff game, which no one outside of our group really thought we could.
Yeah. And obviously they changed the system the year after that and went to the Super 8. I think in the first year we played in the Middle 8. I mean, what's that situation like for a player when, you know, you miss out on that top 8 and then you're basically playing for survival, aren't you, for 7 games?
Yeah, it's not great. It's not great. You know, and it's not great for the club, because I know recruitment, you have to be really careful that you don't overspend. And you normally do that when relegation is there. That's, you know, I think you need that. But when relegation can get you all the way up, even if you're ninth and you've won six games more than 12th, but relegation can still bite you. It's very hard to recruit. And, you know, I often spoke to Dennis, and it was so hard to not only attract players when you didn't know which league you'd be in, but retain players and plan for the future. So it wasn't great. As a player individually, it was quite hard. You know, having the dejection of missing out on the playoffs and then, right, well, now we've got a battle for survival, and the feeling of relief rather than, you know, winning a playoff game and it being like enjoyment. It was more relief when you were winning the games in them mid-lates.
Yeah, and then obviously in the 2016, the year we talked, and that was the year of the Wigan game, and you're in the top eight playing against the top teams. You can't really make the four really for the playoffs, but does that enable you to play a bit more relaxed because you've not really got anything to lose for that final seven?
Yeah, there is that, but we always wanted to win, but we were trying to win the game rather than not lose. So it's a great way to play rugby, trying to win games rather than not make errors and not give the team a chance because you're frightened to death of losing. So it let us, you know, train against teams and put things into place that, you know, sometimes they don't work, but I think the way we were playing and how we were throwing the ball around and the tries we were scoring, you know, the fans were loving it, absolutely loving it. So it was great to be as a player where you could throw the rock ball around, you know, and then back it up, and if it didn't, you know, come off, but you've chanced your arm and you lose the game, then you might lose the game, you know, 28-24 rather than 8-0.
Mm.
And it's a much better way of playing the game and a much more enjoyable way for fans to watch the game.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, you're right. I think people don't realise actually, or probably didn't realise at the time actually, how good maybe that team was, or how good Widnes had it in that mini era, if you like, especially if you compare it to now. I guess one thing that I always used to, there was a bit of a thing going on Twitter about this, was the number of times there was halves of games where you didn't score. So it might be, you know, I don't know, might have been winning at half time and then not scoring the second half, or vice versa. Was that something that you were ever aware of as a player or as a group?
No, that's just sport. I think if you look at a lot of sports teams, and you all want to score points and win every half, but ebbs and flows of the game and turning points in matches always happens. And you know, as good as we were throwing the ball around, it took a lot of energy to do that. And when you came up against another good side who were throwing the ball around, there was often times where, you know, you're throwing the ball around, it don't come off, and you have to defend your line, and you defend your line for that long that it takes all your energy out of you. So sometimes it was inevitable that we'd have periods where we didn't score, but there's also games where we played Leeds Rhinos at home, and they just couldn't contain us, and we'd score 50 odd points, and we were beating a team that, you know, had done the treble or did the treble that year, and we beat them at home by 50 odd points and then beat them away. And sometimes the fans, I used to get frustrated that the fans had always slagged Dennis off or the players off. And we were beating top teams who were spending nearly £1 million more than us per year. And I think the good thing was every game that we went into, the fans generally thought we could win.
Hmm.
They didn't go there hoping we could win. They actually thought we could win that day. And that was home and away against whoever we played. And, you know, I don't think Widnes have had it like that. There was a four-year period there where, definitely when I played there, I can only speak when I played there, that we thought could win every game, and I'm sure the fact that went over to the fans as well. But I get sport, and you always want more. We wanted more, I wanted more, I wanted to win stuff. I wanted to be like the first captain, you know, in the modern era, we witnessed who could have lifted something, but we definitely went down swinging and played some good stuff and had some fun along the way.
Yeah, I mean, do you think Dennis in some ways was a bit of a victim for the way the club was run, that maybe the fans didn't see what was happening in the background, and they sort of took it out on Dennis because they weren't really they just presumed that the club was spending the full salary cap, or do you think there was an element of that?
Yeah, well, I don't think the fans care, do they? Where without disrespecting the fans, they don't care how much money you're spending. They just want a team that can compete. And when we was competing every week, then they expect you to win every week. And that was something that was really hard. I think Dennis was almost a victim of his own success, that how well he dragged a team from the Championship that weren't competing in Super League, then started competing in Super League. Then all of a sudden we made semi-finals in the Challenge Cup. We were going on big runs. We were sat at the top. But it's hard to maintain. And the hardest thing at a club like that at that period is to maintain it over a season when, you know, you lose your key players. Your key players become fatigued because, you know, they're playing every game where, you know, there's no young lads to come in and give them a rest. So that's the hardest thing. That was the biggest difference that we just couldn't crack to be serious challengers. But don't get me wrong, every team respected Widnes back then, and every team knew that if they weren't on, and speaking to players who played against us and coaches who have been coached by now, after that period, they really respected how we were playing and how we were going about our business.
Do you think at the time maybe the more could have been done to bring through players from the academy? Was that because obviously the academy's been probably the shining light for Widnes for the last, probably since you left. Did you ever, what was that sort of feeling for you when you were at the club? Did it feel like there was people capable in the academy of stepping up?
Well, players did step up. I think, you know, Jack Owens played a large proportion of games. You know, Tom Gilmore played, Danny Craven played. But below that, there was a gap. And, you know, if you'd have put the lads in who were in the squad underneath the Adam Lawtons, Tom Gilmores, Danny Cravens, then they just weren't quite ready. And yeah, they'd have put them in and the fans would have loved them being in, but you'd have got beat because they wasn't quite ready, and you'd have knocked the confidence of the lads and you know, the transition from being an academy player to a Super League player doesn't just happen overnight. And I think the fact that it was under-17s and under-19s and there was no A team, I think it's underestimated how big that gap is. So you get a couple of players who can do it, but it's hard to put many more in and be competitive, because it only takes, you know, a real, like, a couple of games where these lads come in and they get absolutely hammered or they don't feel like they're part of it. And it can ruin the confidence for a couple of years. So I love it when kids come through. Like, they brought Matt Whitley through, and Matt were great. Matt was one of the ones that, you know, kicked on. But then there were other lads who came through, and they were just out of the depth. And, you know, it knocked the confidence for years, and they had step downs, and, you know, they tried the best with, you know, players like Liam Carberry, and, you know, there was a couple of back rowers who came up and just never did it. So it's hard to throw them in if they're not ready. If they're ready, they got put in. That was as simple as that. We were desperate to have more players and put players in and give them a chance, but in reality, if they weren't quite ready, Dennis didn't throw them in and, you know, let them sink. He was really protective over the kids that, you know, if he thought they had a right to play and they were good enough, he played them. Mm-hmm. And he showed that in lads like Matt Whitley who went on and you look at him now and, you know, Dennis gave him his debut. We brought him up from the academy. Unfortunately, not every player's like Matt Whitley.
Yeah. What about the pitch? Like, obviously, the whole time Widnes were in the Super League, they had the artificial pitch. Still got the artificial pitch, of course. Was that something that ever bothered you, or was that something you felt was an advantage?
The hardest thing about it was the change of surface. The actual field itself was great. So we had an advantage because we trained on that and played on that all the time. And then teams coming were playing on grass. But we had to do it every week as well. So as much as it was an advantage for us, they only had to do it 1 week. We had to do it every week, every other week away. And that was the only hard thing. It was just going from an artificial pitch to a grass pitch. There were nothing about the field. If everyone had these artificial pitches and they were at a good level like Widnes's was, and it actually had a groundsman on to make sure the crumb was done all the time, then it'd be brilliant.
Yeah. Did you feel like, obviously with everything being on the stadium site, does that help with the whole making you feel a bit more of a team, you know, like where you're training at the ground and you're doing your gym work at the ground and it's always, you know, every day at work for you is coming through to the stadium, and that's obviously not something that every club has.
No, that it makes a massive difference. The facilities at Widnes were brilliant. The second to none. You know, the gym could do with a bit of updating, but that's being real picky. The gym is good enough for Super League level. The field is, the stadium is, and the fact that you can do it all together, you park up, you walk in, there's an ice bath in there, you can eat there, everything. Like you say, the team spirit, because you're around each other all the time, you're not in your cars driving off, you know, the shower facilities, everything was great. Like I keep saying, it was one of the best. I loved every minute of it. And that was because it had everything. It had the full package, and you know, I think everyone was the same who came to Widnes. We were surprised by how good it actually was.
Yeah. I mean, thinking back about all the players that you played alongside at Widnes, is there anyone that stands out as a, or have you got any stories you can tell us of, you know, players that impressed you so much, or who you most enjoyed playing alongside?
I had lots of memories over players. I think, you know, one of the toughest was Eamon O'Carroll. I think, obviously, the Widnes fans didn't see the best of him, but what he put his body through to try and get on that field. You know, I had to cut him out of his shirt at Magic Weekend after his last ever game. You know, he damaged his nerves in his shoulder, and he tried again, and you know, he threw himself into this tackle, and I just seen himself in his head. He knew he were done then, and couldn't even lift his arm up, and I had physically had to cut him out of his shirt. You know, people like that who put the body on the line for the club, knowing that, you know, it might not go so well, but still throw himself in like a tank. They were the lads who I wanted to play with, and you know, we had other like really really good players. Corey Thompson came, and he was a superstar, and you know, people didn't realise how good he was. I think he scored 22 tries in a season, and obviously went back to Australia and done a great job over there. And a lot of the players don't get the accolades when they're at Widnes. It's only when they leave, and like Matt Whitley, I suppose, they leave and go on to a different club and they start getting talked up about a little bit different. But yeah, I think there were lots of really good players. But I'll go back to what I said before, that the amount of good people that there were there in that period, it was more that the people were a joy to be around in training and playing and socialising after. And I really do mean it. It was one of the best times of my career, not just on the field, but off the field, how close we were. And, you know, with like that story there with him, and just want to put his body online. That was what we was all doing, you know what I mean? We played with injuries. We went above and beyond for the club.
Yeah, and do you think that maybe, you know, obviously Dennis went, you know, when he did, he was, well, he departed, I think it was May time, you know, really bad season that year. But there was always the sort of, in the back of my mind, you sort of felt like he would have been able to keep the club up in the qualifiers. And does that sort of relate to the fact that maybe because the players were playing for him, they, you know, he might have got an extra 10% out of them than maybe somebody else might have?
Well, Dennis, I used to have this conversation with Dennis when someone played bad. And they'd be like, why are we not giving it to him, Dennis? At other clubs, like, we should be giving it to him. And he always had the philosophy, well, if we absolutely break him now in a meeting, then 2 weeks later, when the player we put in who's not quite as good can't do it, we put him back in and we have to try and sew his legs back on after severing him in a meeting. Always stuck with me. And that was what Dennis had. He had a management style that, you know, sometimes looked laid back, but he thought about everything. And that's where, no doubt in my mind, Widnes would have stayed up if Dennis would have been there. The lads would have ripped in. And just like we did in the middle eights that year, I don't think we lost a game. To any of the championship teams, especially, I think that would have been the case again. We're Widnes if them would have been there.
Is the coaching side of the game what you're planning to go into once you've finished playing?
At the moment, I'm not too sure. I have got a couple of things, you know, that I'm going to look at, but whether coaching's one of them, I'm not too sure at the moment. So I'm enjoying playing at the minute, and I've always said I'll make a decision when the time's right. So at the minute, I've not even really thought of it too much. I'm just concentrating on playing. So I do enjoy the game. I love the game. I think about the game, and I have done for 20 years, and I can't play the game because I'm not as athletic as some others, but I definitely think about it as much as anyone else. So whether that transcends into coaching, I'm not sure. But at the minute, I'm just enjoying playing.
Yeah, and before we go, is there anything, a message you want to give to any Widnes fans that are listening?
Oh, just stop calling me a snake. No, I'm only joking. Look, I'm happy with how things went at Widnes. I really give everything I had for 4 years. I couldn't give any more. I loved it. I loved, making them happy, and it wasn't the way I wanted it to end, as well as I'm sure they've made their feelings known that they didn't want it to end like that. But what happened, and I just hope the club can get back to somewhere, obviously in Super League at some stage, but get back to competing in Super League like the club was in that period of time.
That's it for Widnes Rugby Chat for this week. Thanks, as always, to sponsors PD Law Solicitors, Arnold Gore's Financial Management, Whistle and Parklands FC. I'll see you in a fortnight's time when we'll look ahead to the very first game of the 2021 season.